This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. I am very pleased to have Gary Grant with us, who is the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association. Mr. Grant, thank you for being with us today on the program.
Thank you very much, Mike, for having me. I'm happy to be here with you.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us. Can we first begin by talking about the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association, and then we can begin to talk about the whole issue of the discrimination that black farmers have been facing regarding the USDA?
Okay. The Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association was formed about 3 years ago as a result of the class action lawsuit that was filed against the United States Department of Agriculture. And what it has basically done is united the black farmers all across America who were struggling to stay on their farms, to continue to own land, and to be able to continue to operate, and even those that were forced out of farming as a result of the discriminatory practices at USDA. So it has served as a sort of a healing process. And out of it is growing a very strong organization that we hope will blend those farmers with the consumers who need to understand where food comes from and how it gets to them.
When we're talking about the discrimination that black farmers have faced at the hands of the USDA, I mean, we're talking about a pattern, an extended pattern of discrimination, correct?
That is correct. And even though the lawsuit only covered a time frame from 1981 through 1996, the pattern of discrimination is far goes way further back than that. The 1982 civil rights study at the by the White House that showed and predicted that by the year 2000 there would be no black farmers left in America if the trend continued and the government continued on its policies that it was implementing. Or not implementing, whichever way it was, and then in 1983, President Reagan, then put that study on the shelf and closed down the Office of Civil Rights at the United States Department of Agriculture.
We're talking with Gary Grant, who is the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association. Mr. Grant, let me ask you, because I mean, you know, when we look at the whole issue of family farms as a whole, all family farms seem to be pretty much under assault. But what happened to the black farmers, and what's been happening to the black farmers over the years is a very different thing that's really been targeted at them because they're black, right?
That is exactly right, and we are the first to say that family farms in America are under attack. However, we have to say at the same time that the American populace nor the United States Department of Agriculture views black farmers as family farmers. Therefore, we have to make our own space and then hope that we will be able to unify with the whole family farm movement. Black farmers, for example, were always expected to be on their tractors or in the field working, while white farmers were allowed to supervise other workers on their farm. So to us, that in itself makes a difference in how they define a family farmer. Other issues that came about was the fact of the non-delivery of programming to the black farmers that were being delivered to our counterparts, our white family farmers. The fact that our white family farmers on average got $20,000 to $30,000 more to operate the same acreage that black farmers were operating, and the fact that black farmers were put on what are known as supervised loans, meaning that the USDA didn't feel that we were capable of managing our own money, and any time that a farmer needed his money, he would have to stop his operation and go to the office and wait for the agent there to see him and write him a check so that he could either go buy a part or buy seed or fertilizer.
Let me ask you if you could expand on that a little bit farther, because, I mean, basically what I'm hearing you say is that on the one hand, when this money was given out to white family farmers, that in essence it was, okay, here's your lump sum of money, go take it and do whatever you're going to do. And yet when we're talking about black farmers who have a hard enough time getting classified as being family farmers in the first place, that they had to go and basically get a check at a time in order to buy a part or something? Is that almost what?
To get a check at the time. It was even worse than that, because what you literally had to do was to go to the supplier, get a bill as to what it would cost, then go to the agent's office and get the check, and then go back to the supplier. And if we take, for example, where I live here in Tillery, North Carolina, I am 30 miles from the nearest farm supplier in one direction and 20 miles from the USDA office in another direction. So by the time I have driven the 30 miles to get the bill, drive 50 miles to get to the agent's office, and then another 50 miles to go back and get the supplies, and then another 30 miles home, my whole day has been shot. And there's no guarantee that when I got to the USDA's office that I would be seen in any kind of a fair amount of time. I mean, we've actually sat there and watched white farmers go in one after the other while we were sitting there, and because we were black, we had to wait until all of the white farmers had finished.
We're talking with Gary Grant, who is the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association. Mr. Grant, let me ask you, because the suit was filed, can we talk about the suit and then what happened after that?
Yeah, we can talk about the suit. And let me just say this, Mike, because we think our acronym is really good. You know, it's BFAA, the Black Farmers and Agriculturalists Association. It's BFAA, BFAA. And we say that it's time for us to BFAA us for a change. We BFAA everybody else, so BFAA us for a change. You're okay. With the filing of the suit, and just so that the listening audience also understands, let me just give a little bit of data here that might help them to understand why this suit was so important. That between 1920, we had over 925,000 black farmers in this country. And by 1992, we had somewhere close to 18,000, which was a drop of 98%. Now, you won't find that staggering figure anywhere else among any kinds of peoples in this nation. And many of the African-American population wants to get away from farming, and simply because of slavery and the sharecropping era. But at the same time, they forget the value and the power of the land. And I always tell people that the only real power in this country is who is controlling the land. And when we take a look around the world, all of the wars that are being fought over who's going to rule the land. So we just need to keep that in mind and understand that this is a part of our history, and we need to be aware of that, and that if we don't have land, then we are going to be mere refugees in this nation in a few more years. So with that as a background, that was the reason that we filed the class action, and it took we filed the class action in August of 1997 and finally got a settlement in April of 1999. The basic settlement was that there would be two tracks. Track A, for minimum proof of discrimination, a farmer could receive $50,000, and if he still owed the government, he would receive debt write-off. Track B would be that if you had documentation, then you could go for more in your settlement of the cash amount and also to get your debt written off. When this was brought to us, we were told that track A would be as easy as tying your shoe. What the lawyers failed to tell us was that it was as easy as a two-year-old learning to tie his shoe, because all of what the government does is to immediately begin to find ways to block people from being able to succeed in track A. And the first thing that they did was said that you had to name a similarly situated white farmer. Now, who has access to the records of knowing whether or not a farmer is similarly situated to you? No one goes out talking about how much money they are making or how much money they are borrowing and how much money they are spending. So we don't even have access to that, but that's a requirement for a person to get into track A, is to be able to name a white farmer that would have been similarly situated and who got funded in the same year that you applied and perhaps got turned down or did not get your money, Or you that one of the other pieces is that when we applied for money, it took 120 days longer to process a black applicant's application than it did a white farmer's application.
120 days in farming, I mean, that is that's a lifetime. I mean, that's the difference between failure and success. I mean, it seems ludicrous that these suits could be settled, but then at the same time, these type of requirements made that, I mean, they're there to keep people from being able to collect, plain and simple.
They're there to be able to keep people from collecting, and that's the whole piece of it. $50,000, number one, to operate a farm is chicken feed. In today, it wouldn't even buy a decent tractor, less more the rest of the equipment that you need to have in order to farm. Getting the debt write off would be much more valuable than the $50,000 if that was what they are doing. But they are now saying you can only get the debt write off if you got the loan and you say that you were discriminated in the process of getting the loan.
Can you explain that?
For example, if I borrowed from the USDA in 1983 and I know that I was discriminated against but I didn't file a complaint, and then I tried to borrow again in 1985 and I was discriminated against and I wrote a complaint in 1985, our understanding of the consent decree says that if I prevail, all of my debt should be written off, which means the 1983 debt and the 1985 debt. They are now saying that I can only claim the 1985 debt because that was the one that I complained about. Thus, if I receive the $50,000, then the USDA can very quickly say, well, you owe us that for the 1983 debt.
But the point being is, how could you complain about it if you didn't know that you
were... Well, no, we knew that we were being discriminated against.
Right, but you couldn't prove it.
The issue is, and especially here in the South, that was the way things were operated. You know, that's just the way things operated. That's just the way that things were. And this is what most of the black farmers, you know, you understood where you were and you acted accordingly. However, the more glaring part of this is when we did complain, the president had done away with the office that was supposed to handle the complaint. So, you know, and then they want to hold us accountable because there's a 2-year limit of statute of limitations. So if you feel that you've been discriminated against and you didn't complain within 2 years, then you had basically lost your case. So we had to go through, get Congress to pass a law to set that aside where we were concerned. And we were successful in doing that. And because we were successful in doing that, now the USDA is putting in all of these other restrictions. And we have to say that our lawyers, the class counsel, seems to be working conjunctively with them in putting up barriers to us receiving the funds. And America's people think that the farmers have been paid. And we're getting letters of rejection every day. There have been approximately somewhere between 15,000 to 18,000 applications processed, and over 40% of those were kicked out in the first round. And that's not right. If I was a black farmer, got a loan late, and was put under a supervised loan, which are the complaints that I'm issuing, why do I need to prove anything else? When have you ever heard of someone pleading guilty to doing something, and then the victim had to turn around and prove it all over again?
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're talking with Gary Grant, who is the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturist Association. Mr. Grant, there's a couple of things that I want to touch on. One, I guess, first is you said that it appears that the Class Action Council is actually assisting USDA in blocking these payments?
Yes, that is exactly what it seems to be with us. They have recently entered into an agreement to extend the time that USDA has to respond to my application being sent in. There was no discussion with us. There was not no attempt to go before the court to say that it could be extended. Yet, when the farmer fails to complete his application on the date of that it was due, and they did not give us an additional 60 days for people to even join the lawsuit, even though we asked for it, because there are still many people out there who hadn't even heard it and didn't know that it was going on. But they would not extend that. But our attorneys have agreed with USDA that they have an additional 60 days, which is double the time that they're supposed to have to respond to a claim.
Well, certainly that does seem to me that the attorneys are at least partially looking out for the government's interest as compared to ours, you know?
Exactly. And one of the reasons that we believe is that the attorneys get paid by the government. So even though they were working for us, who's paying the bill is the government. And so that's where we just can come to only one conclusion, and that's who you are loyal to.
The other topic that you brought up was you were talking about black farmers in the South, and in some respects, from their perspective, what was happening regarding these loans just kind of being a part of the way things work down there. Can you talk a little bit more about that so people have a real understanding about what's been happening, not just in the last few years to black farmers, but what's been happening historically? Because, I mean, that plays into this, obviously.
Right, and we all know that racism is prevalent throughout the United States, but the South, everyone points to the South, and the reason that we point to the South is because it is blatant, it's clear, it's not a backstabbing process. It is made very plain. Black man, this is as far as you go, don't you push, because you will, you know, you'll run into trouble. Whereas in the, what we call, as Malcolm said, up South in the New York or out in California or wherever, you have a different kind. But so you operate in a system of institutionalized racism. And if you live in a place, you understand those operations. So when you walk into a USDA agent's office and there's a hangman's noose on the wall, or the agent is sitting there with a Son of the Confederate necktie on, the message is very clear to you. You don't start trouble, or your application will not get processed. You bow your head and you shuffle and you don't look me in the eye. And this was just a process that the black farmer understood, and he gave into it because he didn't even know, number one, that he had a place to complain to. Because if he wanted to complain, guess where he had to start complaining? His first complaint of discrimination had to be to the agent that was discriminating against him.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yes.
So how far is that going to get, right? And if you did manage to get past that agent, or if you took it upon yourself and went higher, then you get to an office that has been locked and your file has just been thrown in a room and or in a box or wherever, and no one is taking a look at it.
We're talking with Gary Grant, president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association. Mr. Grant, I mean, in the final analysis, of course, what we're really talking about here is black farmers being pushed off of their land. And I mean, as you stated earlier, I mean, without land, you are simply at the will and the whim of whoever owns the land. And what we have is some people who manage to, through hard work and dedication, get a place that was theirs. And having that place taken away from them and that wealth being transferred into other hands, correct?
That is correct. And what we as black people need to remember, why were we brought here in the first place? And remind the listening audience that we did not come. We were brought here. And we were brought here for economic agriculture. That's why we were brought here. So that in itself ought to say to us there is value in agriculture. Then if we don't have land, just as we didn't during the time of slavery, and we were at the mercy of the massa, whether he wanted to give us the crumbs from the table or happened to be willing to give us a pig foot, you know, we were always at his mercy. But when we began to own land and what our ancestors did out of being able to get that land and began to grow their own food, how much more healthier they were and how much more stronger they were because they were eating decent diets. You know, the massa didn't necessarily furnish you a good meal. He just wanted to make sure you had enough strength so you could go in the field the
right
next day. So until we understand that food comes from the land And whoever is growing the food is actually controlling many other aspects of our lives. For example, you'll hear a lot of parents today talking about how early, especially our young girls, are entering their puberty at age 7, 8, and 9, you know, that the menstrual cycles are starting, that breasts are being developed so much earlier. Well, the agribusiness that is growing food and whether meat as well as the vegetables at such a rapid rate that we can be this wasteful nation here, none of that, all of that growth hormone is never taken out of those animals or out of the vegetables. So as we consume it, we are consuming growth hormones. What else do you expect to happen to us?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that people are very, very much not clear on, is that when we're talking about agribusiness, they're about growing, producing, selling at all costs. And what happens when you eat that food is of little concern to them.
Exactly. And we're continuing to take poisons into our bodies that our bodies are not ready to, you know, even process and get rid of. So you've got all of this high rate of cancer, you've got all of these high diabetes and hypertension among the African-American population, and a lot of it has to do with what we are currently eating and how we're eating. And, you know, the fast food chain, our children are hooked just like people are hooked on smoking or any other drug.
We're speaking with Gary Grand, who is the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association. Obviously, we're talking about the plight of black farmers here in America. Mr. Grand, let me ask you, because we only have a few minutes left, but on the one hand, as you so stated, I think most people who read the major newspapers believe that this whole suit has been settled. After talking with you, obviously that is not the case. What needs to happen from here?
We need for people to call the White House. Bill Clinton needs to understand, and we believe that he knows what is happening out here, but he needs to understand that the American population is outraged that a people who have been discriminated against and a government agency has admitted to it are still being discriminated against and not being paid or this process working for us. They also need to contact their legislative elected officials and tell them the same thing, because they, too, believe that this has already happened. We would appreciate them contacting us if they would like. We're in need of some contributions to keep the war going. We go back to Washington on the 28th of this of February for an appeal hearing. There are those of us who are appealing. The one on the 28th is, within the consent decree, there is an agreement between our attorneys and the USDA that USDA can renege on this consent decree at any time and stop paying farmers, and there's nothing that we can do about it.
What was that?
Yeah.
Say that again.
There is a clause within the agreement, the settlement agreement, that allows at any time for USDA to say, we are not going to pay any more farmers, whatever, for whatever the reason they want to say, and that we have no process to hold them accountable to it.
I think that's something that definitely needs to be appealed.
Exactly. And that's what we are saying. So who are the lawyers, who are our lawyers working for, us or the U.S. Department of Agriculture? And it certainly seems, again, that if you're willing to do that and allow your clients to be left out in the cold, the government has over 50% of the land that they have in inventory, which means that they are holding, that they are sitting on, is land that belonged to black people, and they are not making any effort to return that land to us.
So the appeal takes place on February 28th, and you and others will be in Washington. And if people wanted to get more information about Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association, how would they go about doing that?
Well, first of all, we have a website, but the name is too long for you to get there. But if you go online and just look, you know, start typing in Black Farmers, it will lead you there eventually. They can also reach us here at our office in Tillery, North Carolina. The phone number is 252-826-2800. That's again 252-826-2800. They can reach us by email at Tillery, T-I-L-L-E-R-Y, at AOL.com. Whenever we are doing activities, it's usually posted on our website, and they can find the address there for sending us contributions or all of the speeches and things that have been delivered, and as well as documents that we are presenting to the court.
We've been speaking with Gary Grant, who's the president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association. Mr. Grant, we are kicking off what I hope to be will be a series of programs because, of course, February is Black History Month, and I don't think we get any more historic than the black farmer in America. Any final thoughts about this topic for our audience today?
I would say that very much to what you said, that to kick off Black History Month and talking about black farmers and land ownership here in this nation is probably the best thing that you can do. We would ask people to remember our acronym, BEFA, BEFA us for a change. We BEFA everybody else, so BEFA us for a change.
That's great.
That the farmers, this is not just the fight of the black farmers, this is the fight of really the black nation here in America, because what happens to us will happen to all the others.
And can you give the phone number one more time for people who were looking for pens to write it down?
Okay, if they would give us a call at area code 252-826-2800.
Gary Grant, president of the Black Farmers and Agriculturists Association, thank you for being with us on the program. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mike, and I do hope that we'll get an opportunity to be back with you.
I hope so, too, sir.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, FLR@JPS.net, or by telephone 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.